Hit that record here. There we go. That seems to be doing something.
Yeah.
I wanna go back to basics. I wanna go back to beginning blocks. We've been getting a lot of what the fuck is happening double feature panic.
Not only from just us, but also from everybody who listens to the show.
Right, right. That's right. Yeah, people want to know what the fuck is going on. So we're here to do that. So we raise money for the show every year. Mm-hmm. We save some money by paying for everything all at once a year. Came up with this great idea to switch from Kickstarter to Patreon.
Right.
And Patreon.
The plan was to lower the stress of both you and I, but also the kind people who help support the show, instead of asking somebody to give, you know, $600 at once, which is a large sum of money. Maybe you just give, you know, $50 a month, which is like, isn't that the max right now on this Patreon?
We won't even let people give more than that.
Yeah, so I mean, it ends up costing, you know, that individual the same amount of money over a full year, and it's just, it feels a lot, you know, it's a lot less out of your paycheck or whatever, however you look at it.
However you get that money.
Yeah, however your money shows up.
So I think that while I still feel like this is so fitting for our show, it's ridiculous, I also forgot about our bills.
Right.
And that means it's the first of the month, and we're about to run out of money for this bunker. How many, so let me ask this. So right now we don't have money to run the show.
Right.
And I was hoping we'd get it by this episode. Technically, we don't have to pay this off until, what is today? If today is the 2nd, which I'm not going to acknowledge because that would mean the show's late. So it's probably, I'm imagining that it's Wednesday at midnight, June 1st.
Mm-hmm.
We would have until Tuesday the 6th to actually send this in the mail, since that's a weekday, and be like, yo, we paid you. I don't know why you would take all our shit offline. It's clearly
right.
Checks in the mail, buddy, you know. Yeah. So we're not absolutely...
And we're going to assume that the sky doesn't fall between now and then.
That's yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's just general for the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we got 6 days. Currently, we can't do that. But over the next couple days, I am going to plead with people just to throw in $2, $5.
Right.
Maybe 8 if you're feeling wild.
What's the price of your morning cup of coffee, which is actually $2 would be the price of your week's, or if you put in $10, that's your week's worth of coffee or something.
You have
like
no
that.
Idea what coffee costs, do you?
All my coffee is free now, man. I'm running a scam here.
In 2017 in Los Angeles, a cup of coffee, just a cup of coffee, is $2.75.
Okay.
If you want to get like a mocha, it's
$6. All right.
That's well, what then, coffee costs
in that case,
right now.
Here's what I'm going to say. For year 10 of Double Feature, we will sell the bunker. We're going to sell the bunker. That money will, all the money we make from bunker sales, we will put into the show, which means we're going to need approximately $666 per month outside of bunker sales.
You want to go back above ground?
I don't want to. Nobody wants to, but it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
All right, listen. Yeah, so we only need half as much space in the bunker because you won't be there jamming up my style. I understand.
Right.
That gives us 6 days to get to, we're at 450 right now. So what needs to happen is if you go on patreon.com/doublefeature, this is really similar to our Kickstarter in that there are incentive levels. The reason you're there, the thing you go there for, is to create a podcast called Double Feature.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it hits a certain amount, in this case, $650.
Right.
Comically, $666 is the actual breakdown that we need to hit. If it hits that amount, we get to do Double Feature.
Right.
So that's good.
Yeah.
We're most of the way there. If we can get this together, we only need $200
more. Yeah.
So if you can give anything, even if you can't give month after month, you know, sign up for the month. It's not even going to charge your credit card till the end of the month. And And that'll at least, you know, push us ahead so we have another extra month to kind of get this long game rolling here.
When you're looking at these tier levels, you get a lot of different rewards just for pitching in an extra $2 or $10 here and there. When you're thinking about these tier levels, consider, you know, how many hours of content you get monthly for, say, $8, right? That's 4 shows on the regular show and an AC. So you're paying less than $2 a show.
So we have new openings for executive producers. One of our executive producers sent me a message. Charles, you know Charles. And Charles has sent you messages, but I don't know. You guys must be friends. And then Charles just like plays bad cop with me. So he's been digging in the knife because, you know, he knows that I have depression and suicidal tendencies. So he likes to really jab it and twist it, you know, just kind of a sadistic thing he does. Anyways, Charles had a really good point. What he's been saying is, look, Patreon is new. It's scary. People don't know how it works. Now, we're telling people it's just the same as Kickstarter. It's just longer. It'll make sense. You go there, you see that giving money makes the show possible, and also you get stuff for it. But he was thinking the same thing you were, coffee-wise. He actually tried to appeal to the libertarians, which is a funny concept in today's day and age, because I'm not even sure what that means. But you know, he's encouraging us to market. I'm going to start that right now, specifically by marketing our show to you. That's all, you know, we'll roll from there, and then maybe you can market it to, say, everyone who listens, and then they can market it to other people. But we have this population who listens to the show, pretty large. It's in the tens of thousands now. And that's a figure that, you know, you're like not supposed to say in podcasting that you like have 1 million or 10,000 or 100,000. You're supposed to just be really vague about it. But what?
Right.
I don't know why. So I guess so you could sell mattress ads and lie to them about your numbers. But the reason you guys know our numbers is because I've said time and time again, less than 1% of the people give to the Kickstarter. So do the math. Now we're talking less than a fraction of a percent of the people. But right now, that's literally, out of tens of thousands, that's literally 40 people have signed up for the Patreon. patreon.com/doublefeature. So he was saying that's one of the crazy numbers that's worth reminding people of. And again, we've had a lot of people just in the 40s, probably not accurate anymore, because we've had a lot of people just recently putting in $2. Which means a lot. You don't get a lot for $2, but you get the primary objective, which is that hopefully, you know, we have more than 4 shows left of Double Feature. But then he also mentioned that the wider numbers we're really looking at is what you were saying. There are free episodes of this show going back 10 years. That means nearly 500 episodes, 500 hours of recording. And that's all content that, you know, a lot of that's not available. But if you are a Patreon subscriber, you get that. You get all 500 or whatever hours of what we have. You get all the additional content. There's all sorts of different tiers of things you can get. And the breakdown on that is like, I mean, a fraction of a penny per hour.
Would you say less than 1% of a dollar?
It is less than 1% of a dollar. Yeah.
So
I'm just asking you to pay a penny a show. That's really all I want from people. Perhaps even a little less than that.
Yeah.
So I was really doom and gloom yesterday and the day before, and I try and come on here and be happy, but that's just really not what I feel inside my... I just think talking to you is really funny.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The podcast is doing its own thing, and the podcast is usually where you and I come and be like, I mean, at least we have this going on.
Right.
And then when
right.
when something goes wrong with the podcast, we're like, great, now the podcast is failing and the world's about to catch on fire.
Yeah.
No one's going to know how we feel about the third human centipede.
Right. Listen, we got a lot more work to do. We can't just have 5 episodes left. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So there's still 4 days on this thing. We just need $200. Just do me this favor. You don't even have to give money. Just go look at the number. That's it.
Yeah, I think that's a good start.
Usually there's, fuck all of it. Just go, it's patreon.com. Do it on your phone while you're listening to this. patreon.com/doublefeature. And just see where we're at and just watch it with us.
Otherwise, what's going to happen is there will be no backlog of shows and there will just be a weekly conference call that will sound like this.
Oh, God. No backlog is the worst.
Nothing to show for 10 years of work.
That took so long to make.
Yeah.
It was so hard.
Well, and it's a spiteful thing, too, because all the jokes will stop being even approachably relevant between anybody but you, me, and John.
Oh, that reminds me. Okay, one other thing. Beaver John.
Yeah.
Beaver John has put together an amazing thing. Fuck. There's actually a lot of this to talk about. All right. One, there's new executive producer slots. I pulled them out right in this last less than a week here. Go there now. Those are going to disappear the quickest. Become an executive producer of the show. And it's not just for a year. You can hold on to that fucking spot. You know, mm-hmm. with your life.
This can be like Weinstein levels of...
No term limits mm-hmm. on double feature executive producers. Once you get your claws on that, you know, no more open until one of the double feature justices dies. So that's on there. But the other thing I was going to say is, you know, I tease this big secret. We have long talked about Beaver John's entire statistical history of double feature. I don't even know what to call it. The number breakdown for everything that's ever happened on the show, where we've used every reference.
It's kind of like the DF Rosetta Stone, basically. Yeah.
So, you know, if you're wondering, like, where is an episode where we talked about this or established this, or so many of the little gimmicky fucking things we did, where are the alternate themes? What episodes had a, like, hidden thing after the credits?
When were we racist by mistake?
I love that part. Yeah, he has a retrospective on what may be deemed in current America racism. And he just tags off the episodes that he thinks applies. His data is, I mean, if you've ever listened to Double Feature, before even listening to another episode, get on there and look at his data. It's in the, everybody who's got a log on for the Patreon, I think that's everybody who's $5 and above, can go in. It's in the extras. It's free. It's a huge document full of just crazy. He's going through right now and getting all the actors from every movie we've ever seen so he can actually calculate who's been on the show the most each year.
Yeah.
It's that kind of stuff. Kind of. Nothing like this has ever existed.
Yeah. Right.
By nothing like this, I mean nothing this arbitrary.
It's the true champion of our podcast is this document.
Ugh.
Basically the official podcast of John's spreadsheet is what's going on.
Listen, regardless, we still got these five episodes. We got to get to one of those now. That's patreon.com/doublefeature.
Okay. Seriously though, we're going to make the best of these last 5 weeks of this bunker. We're going to have a house party, just me and you. And that's it though.
There's some suicide girls I want to invite.
Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me. You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric 13. This is Double Feature. And I'm here with,
Space Outer?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was practicing.
Right, warming up there. Warming up. We have two movies. We got some sad going on in the show.
I would say maybe sad. Sad might not be the widest term to describe this. I would go with melancholy.
Ooh, melancholy.
Because there's a certain beauty to the sadness, right. However infinite.
Sure, the same can be said of slitting your wrist. So that's great. Yeah. That's great that you can do that. So we're going to talk about two movies and probably make a little light of the suicide.
I think so.
A little bit.
Yeah, right.
But the movies do a really good job of talking all about it and you know, near and dear to my heart anyways. So I feel like how people go, I'm black so I can make black jokes.
Right.
I feel like, oh, I'm depressed so I can make suicide jokes.
Right,
it's,
totally.
It's okay.
Sure.
And maybe throat cancer jokes if this doesn't get any better this year. Double feature. Jesus Christ. Okay. So what's going first? Where do we chapter to? Give me the whole spiel.
Here's the skinny. We're doing Skeleton Twins first. More on that in a moment. And we're going to do Inside Llewyn Davis second at the 24-minute mark. That's where you get your Cohen on. Before that, we're going to do Skeleton Twins, which I'm happy to say is brought to you by our listener and dear friend, John.
At this point, isn't he Beaver John?
Beaver John.
He'd probably be all right with that, right?
This is his last, this is his final pick. He's picked, and for those of you who are regular listeners and didn't just jump all the way back to the Citizen Kane episode and then to here, which, hey, go do that if you haven't.
It's like watching the first and last episode of a television show and being like, yeah, I watched the whole thing.
Totally. But John has picked a slew of films on this year's year of DF. So this is his final, this is the final pick.
Now I wanted to, just because I thought John would love this, I wanted to give the top Beaver websites that people could go to if you're interested in Beavers. Now I hadn't planned that, but as we were talking about John, and John is a Beaver evangelist, if you will, he is a big fan and proponent of the Beaver.
Yeah. Right.
And
major contributor to the Beaver lobby.
Right. Yeah. And I think he took some joy, and we can say this now that the year is nearly complete. I think he took some joy in Beaver being a synonym for vagina. I believe that that has been funny to him to hear us not talk about, by the way, not talk about, not address the entire time.
Taking the high
road.
Don't
pat us on the back for the weird. The weird performance already.
We had to save all our pussy talk for the finale this year. We didn't have.
Right. Well, so perhaps fittingly then, I went on my DuckDuckGo search here and I just typed in top Beaver because I.
You should have typed what is the best Beaver you've ever seen, I believe. But
well, let me tell you. I didn't find 10 Beaver websites, but I did find 10 great websites. So all you have to do is repeat these results, and you too will spend the next 45, 49, however many minutes you want looking at the best Beaver. Having said all that, thanks, John. And let's get into the Skeleton Twins.
All right. Skeleton Twins, I just want to get this out of the way at the beginning so that we don't have to, I don't have to keep gushing about it periodically throughout the film. Mm-hmm. Specifically for me, I love Kristen Wiig. Kristen Wiig is at the top of her game, but specifically for me, I think Bill Hader is one of the most important comedians in modern society.
Sure.
I think that he's a writer on South Park, which is super cool. That's one of his behind the scenes things. He also does that IFC series documentary now where he mocks famous documentaries. He parodies famous documentaries, and that has been successful. That's
and
outrageous.
Also led people to go watch.
Exactly.
These documentaries of note throughout history.
So to see him and Kristen Wiig in a movie like this where they get to play maybe less sensationalized versions of themselves than they usually do. You know, when you're constantly playing comedy, especially when you're coming from a sketch comedy background, an improv background, it's very, very, very cool to see two people who come from that and dive into something this serious. And this, I mean, it not to say that the characters aren't fun-loving, but the level of fun that they're having, especially namely that scene when they're in the hospital and they're giggling and laughing, and I mean that feels so legit, and the comedy there feels so much like just two friends, or say a brother and sister, who are really connecting.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see two people who are just funny in general be able to take that level of realism and apply it to the fact that they're good at being funny.
Sure.
It adds
sure.
this. And that's the blueprint for the film, right? Is these are not easy characters to play. These are not easy characters to like.
Right.
So to come out of the gate with these strong, likable faces portraying these potentially unlikable characters is one of the reasons that The Skeleton Twins will be a movie I rewatch all the time.
Yeah.
Just to see, I mean, it's the nuance of, because it's easy to look at sad people and just want to go away, you know? It really is.
This is, what was Melancholia? That's what
yeah,
that was.
Yeah.
Melancholia was the, where we realize we live in different, on different planets.
Right, right.
For as much as we never do, we totally do.
And so that, I think, is part of the real power of a movie that could be kind of, you know, lackluster otherwise.
Yeah, well, you're talking about rapport, really, between rapport, chemistry between the two actors. And because of the nature of, a brother-sister relationship, they're watching out for each other, but they're doing so in the most intimate of ways. They're doing mm-hmm. so in... with a level of comfortability you can only have with someone that you spend every waking minute with, or have gone through some great period of your life with, or have some mm-hmm. kind of connection with. And what that means in practice is that you often try to get what's best for them by crossing lines mm-hmm. or by being particularly mean to them, because you have that kind of relationship that's so... You're so secure that yeah. you are in each other's lives in that way mm-hmm. that you could just completely, you know, mock the other person or mm-hmm. give them tough love, right?
Sure, right.
And that, if they didn't have, God, I don't want to talk about chemistry, because I feel like somewhere on the internet, people have written 1,000 reviews that praise the chemistry of the two actors. That has to be
I think that the chemistry conversation can also lend itself to the mentality of the characters too.
Okay. Well, so then my point going into that was that the movie only exists in the success that it does because of that chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You have two people who have worked together and have a rapport and can display that on screen in a way that's genuine. And I think if it wasn't genuine, you would have become too distracted by these people just basically mm-hmm. the hijinks that they right. are. Why are these people committing crimes to each other? Would have become the question.
Well, and through the context of both the actors and the characters to one another, if they weren't strong in that way for both the audience and each other, I don't think they go through, I mean, some really fucking hard stuff
yeah.
in this movie. And I'm never watching it thinking that they're going to be beaten beyond bouncing back.
Right.
The four B's, beaten beyond bouncing back.
Yeah.
The more you find out about these characters, the less you question their mental states at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And the more you realize how much of a success what has been looking like a teetering failure has
right,
been. You know,
right.
you get 60 minutes into the film, find out what the brother's love interest, who that is to him. And mm-hmm. suddenly you go, oh, well, that's why you killed yourself. Hey, you're doing really good if that's what your life's been like. You don't have the movie starts at the bottom, you know, it's at the very, I mean, ultimately the end of one of their lives, probably the end of both of their lives to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And so it intentionally leaves this shroud of mystery as to what got them there to begin with. And instead that unravels to the two characters. And then there's a certain level of the audience that has to play catch up, because like we see, they've grown up together. It's kind of like how our audience constantly has to play catch up to you and I, because you and have this obscenely strong rapport of just constantly spending time I mean, it's to put this on a ground that we're familiar with, How often do you have a conversation with another person and want to reference a movie and go, actually, the only person who's ever seen that right. is like, it's mind-boggling to me how much easier I find it to speak to you, not about movies, just about our respective lives right, off the air,
right.
because I know that, I mean, we have done countless hours of the same mental Olympics.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that we've been in the same place for a lot of the same conversations. So right. there's a mutual sort of language. That,
exactly.
You know, I don't remember what fucking movie it was, but at some point this year, I remember going, it's kind of like, what's that movie? And with no information or context, you just say the name of the movie. Right. I don't even remember what fucking movie it was or why we were doing that. But just out of nowhere, I went, you know, this sort of reminded me of that movie. And you just went, oh, that movie. That's what you're... what you're talking about. That's what happens when you fucking live inside each other's heads.
Right.
Speaking of living inside each other's heads, gotta cleanse those chakras. Cleanse all
right.
those chakras.
Some beautiful chakra cleansing.
I think that's a great point by starting, you know, as down as you're talking about and kind of coming back up.
Right.
I think there's something
you're
a little
basically leveling out. You're
these,
basically, yeah it's almost leveling out.
But that instantly makes the characters, the central characters, more likable by comparison. That somebody mm-hmm. is coming into their lives mm-hmm. who is, you know, basically it looks like, oh, and mom kind of sucks. And maybe that's where part of that, you know, those suicidal tendencies comes from.
Well, and I think too, one of the most jarring moments of self-identity for me was when Luke Wilson's character, who plays the husband, is but he's a genuinely kind, honest, comforting, likable individual. And I'm kind of like, oh my God, I wish this guy would go away so I can hang out with these sad folks.
I know.
And that's when that opened to something in me where I was
you're like, oh no.
Yeah. I'm just sitting there going, I mean, there is no reason I shouldn't like him. But for some reason, there's just, I can't identify with him. And he's a good person. He actually does help everybody along the way. He's an undersung hero in the film. But I mean, I've had friends that ask if I want to go climbing and I just roll my eyes.
Oh, I know.
Maybe it's a breakthrough, but.
Well, you are hanging out with Lance going, you want to like talk to some depressed kids with glasses for a while? You
know, can't just, we
like,
just
hang out? And
yeah, I'm going, Lance is like, you want to go climbing? I'm like, want to watch Human Centipede 2?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I think it extends our previous conversation about normal society and weirdo society. But weirdo society is a lot larger than people assume. And to some extent, it's everyone. I think there's a lot of people who recognize themselves as weird and feel the need to put on a public face of not that. There's a lot of people who embrace it, but I think there's a very small minority of people who don't think they have some dark stuff in there. And when a movie like this comes out that avoids the mold of maybe other things in a genre or of similar topics, it says this is more relatable, but perhaps more importantly, more complex than other movies get attention for. Nothing in this movie seems super clear cut for me. Mm-hmm. It all seems very real in how complicated it is, but it's not, you know, look at the relationships between the characters, how they go through these things that are, they're twisted situations, but they're not uncommon situations. Having a complicated romance, being in I think maybe the most relatable is being in a marriage that bores you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's why people cheat, you know? It's a large reason why people cheat. They're bored in what they have and something else is exciting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's problems at home and a spouse is lying to the other and there's a debate over having children and pregnancy. These are all things that happen, but movies often tell us, but you got to come together and do this and that's how it will be resolved. They always go, and here is I have the solution for how we should all fix this. Here's the manual on what to do if X, Y, or Z happens. And I don't think that's anywhere more apparent in the film than dealing with issues of Statutory Rape.
Mm-hmm.
Normally a movie totally goes, and here's the handbook on what should happen with rape. And it's, you know, statutory rape is especially, I mean, we've been all over the spectrum this year, but statutory rape comes from a place legally that I think is, you don't really see this with her characters because you don't know too much about that relationship.
Right.
You know
right.
that his sister pushed that off. I think was probably the one to report it or create that that schism there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is a guy who had a relationship with a much older man when it was, as he says, very illegal to do so. And they have a great rapport now that they're older. It didn't completely fuck him up. And it wasn't rape in the black and white sense that we think of rape.
Mm-hmm.
But in this country and in...
It wasn't rape without consent.
Right, right. Again, the magic consent word comes mm-hmm. back to be the answer. There's the manual
right
there is yeah. consent. But, you know, legally, I think laws about statutory rape, they essentially say that a minor is too young to make a decision about something.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a direct connection between a sexual encounter and ruining your life.
Mm-hmm.
As if to say, basically those laws come from religion and sex mm-hmm. is bad. They come from that place.
Sure. They come from the kind of ideology that virginity versus losing one's virginity is some sort of cataclysmic difference in a human being.
Yeah, yeah. And that the law has to prevent people who are younger from making bad decisions.
Right.
And then further,
it's
bad decisions that would ruin their lives.
Right. It comes from a similar place, or it seems like the same sort of laws about, say, driving or mm-hmm. drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Where the kid doesn't know any better. They don't know how to behave in these scenarios. They're not old enough to know any better. When in reality, it's kind of like you have to be 15 before you can break a bone. That's kind of what it's more like.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, I can see arguments, of course, for I don't want to get like heavy
God,
political
no, me
on
either.
It, but you know, I can see a lot of arguments around that, but the origin, everything is heavily tainted by the religious perspective. The sex mm-hmm. is bad. If we were to start society with today's zeitgeisty sort of awareness, we would have a much different conversation about why to create those laws.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, now we have a country that's imprisoning 17-year-olds for dating 19-year-olds. And I mean, it's ridiculous.
The other way,
so,
but yeah.
I bring all this up because the movie approaches it from a more open mindset. It goes, you know, this isn't the fucking, I might do this to you again now. Remember we saw a movie a few years ago and it was a really young actor who's a thing now. And...
Mysterious Skin.
There it is. Now when I reference you coming up with a movie, I can be like, when you mention Mysterious Skin.
Yeah.
Mysterious Skin had a huge component of something bad happened to me when I was younger, and this is how it influenced me. And that's a perspective, and there's a lot of honesty in that. But it is all possible. Also possible because humans are complicated creatures that, you know, they had a romance when he was younger, and it wasn't something that fucked him up. In fact, not being able to, he almost holds a little bit of a grudge against his sister for breaking that up mm-hmm. as if that could have really been something nice in my life and now it's fucking gone.
Right.
Treating that with gray shades is, I think it's a pretty brave thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I feel I had to backpedal just talking about maybe there shouldn't be such strict statutory rape laws.
Right.
That just sounds like it's bad. Movies and culture have told us.
One of the things, too, that I love about that is the paradox is, well, maybe the statutory rape should have been handled more delicately. However, the fact that she's cheating on her husband is that is a hard no.
Yeah.
The movie, if you want to see a black and white coverage of any sort of moralistic stance, it's cheating. And yeah. I mean, I'm not to say that I disagree. I'm not trying to like make it seem like, come on, you're gonna let statutory rape slide. But what about the gray area in betraying somebody's trust of yourself?
Right.
I just mean, I think that the movie does have a strong moral foundation, and in so much that knowing that much about something like being unfaithful, it gives way more credence to its tackling of statutory rape, because it's not like it's in moral gray area the whole time. It sets a precedent what's moralistically okay and what's not, and then goes, now that you know that we're both on the same page with something, what about this other thing?
Yeah, well, I think the movie has more a spectrum rather than from wrong or right. It has a spectrum of black and white to shades of gray.
Sure.
It goes, these things over here are very clear how, you know, a person with moral fiber believes, and so does society. And then we shift into, I mean, look at Rich as a character. You don't know what to make of that guy. Mm-hmm. You don't know if he was taking advantage of a young person. Now he won't fucking talk to him. He's pushing him away. Did his life get ruined? Does he have animosity? Did he have a family to cover up something that he was, you know, having weird feelings about? And by not seeing that story, this is a person who's in all sorts of strange and not well understood territory. And then we go all the way to the other side of the spectrum with the cheating, which provides many different levels along the way of life is confusing and complicated. And I think to contrast the relationship of the sister and the brother, we spend so much time treating her brother like he is some sort of freak, that he comes into their lives. Mm-hmm. And we all know he has mental problems and stuff. So listen, we'll try and deal with it, but he's just a little bit weird. But at the beginning of the movie, they're both trying to commit suicide.
Right.
And I love what that says again, in that this isn't, the numbers on depression and stuff are so fucking high. I mean, they're higher than like 9/11 conspiracy high, you know. it's like a 1 in 4 people kind of thing. But I don't actually know what it is, but I remember being struck by, wow, that's if you're in a room of people, several of them are on medications for depression. And so we get a look at how outwardly somebody might treat that character versus his sister, which in a lot of ways might have it worse. You know, we look at all the stuff going on in her life and it's falling apart, and he's seeming to piece back together a lot of things, resolve some old issues, and, you know, figure out why he got to that place where she's still living a lot of lies. She's still, you know, she's still dishonest with her spouse and cheating and hiding these things and so forth. So I like seeing both perspectives and how much these characters share in common, but how much outwardly they pretend, or perhaps their environment pretends, they're very different types of people. A normal person and some fucking weirdo, you know?
Right.
I was so interested when you wanted to do Inside Llewyn Davis, because I had no idea where you wanted to go on that. Mm-hmm. There's our theme now that by pairing it with a movie, we give it a little bit of context here. Uh-huh. But there's also a lot of bad going on in Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, Inside Llewyn Davis is... I know I said this about Intolerable Cruelty, and I don't think that it's not my favorite. It's possible that all Coen Brothers movies are my favorite Coen Brothers movie at the time of watching. But Inside Llewyn Davis is really one of the... it feels like a black sheep Coen Brothers film.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways. It's not funny, but it's way more, there's a lot more heart in it. It feels a lot more personal in a lot of ways. And it handles kind of, whereas The Skeleton Twins definitely deals with internal struggles, things like depression. Inside Llewyn Davis, I would say, probably doesn't deal directly with something like depression.
Right.
It deals instead with being given shitty cards over and over and over again.
Sure. Well, I think this is also a great look at suicide outside of the realm of depression.
Totally.
Because you always associate the two, but here's a character who's kind of, he's a little bit mopey about it, but I don't know that I would say this is a clinically depressed person.
No.
And I don't know if I would have said that of his previous partner. So we talk about suicide just as an instance of getting to the end of, well, where the fuck is this going anyways?
Mm-hmm.
There are other reasons for suicide than just depression.
Right.
So and you think, you mentioned it being cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big question I have coming away from this movie is how much of what happens
is self-fulfilling.
Well, yeah. How much of it this is, how many of his problems are his decisions?
Yeah.
And how many are circumstantial or you know, bad luck?
Well, I mean, I think one of the reasons that this movie has a powerful look at that is it's through the lens of musicianship, but more specifically the folk scene in New York back in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the more difficult things for you and I to tackle because it deals pretty directly with, would you rather be poor or would you rather be doing what you love? Because those are your options. You can't have both.
I had a little bit of a fear as I was watching this that the movie sort of feels one way and you and I are going to not see that at all.
I know.
Like, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah. But it's funny because the movie, you go into it and he's constantly given what would look like opportunities in a lot of ways.
Right.
And I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think that the one thing you can tell for certainty from frame one of this film, well, I guess it takes a few frames because it's mostly audio. It's not that this guy isn't good.
Yeah.
It's the more depressing reality that you and I don't like to face, which is that sometimes good isn't all you need to be.
Yeah.
You know, you can be the best and still not succeed. That's just the nature of selling art.
Yeah, and I haven't hammered this awful reality in a while, but I think success is mostly luck, mostly time and place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, we see it on the show all the time. There's people doing much more interesting things better than the people who are widely received. And you, some of them you can't even make an excuse for, like, oh, this is more widely appealing. It's just a matter of, hey, why didn't this guy get the credit for doing Bob Dylan-y stuff and Bob Dylan did? You know what I mean? I also feel like when we come up against these decisions, most of the decisions are around, you know, people look at this and go, well, you could have had all these gigs, but you didn't do it. And the Coen brothers, as artists themselves, I feel like have our back a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we know they're auteurs. If they were anybody that we weren't super familiar with, but this is what, Coen brothers film 12, we're pretty confident that.
Right. Well, they didn't keep Barton Fink in that sweaty hotel just because, you know, and tell him, why don't you work at a gas station instead of writing?
Yeah,
you
sure.
know what I mean? It's, he has opportunities in this movie to get jobs. And in fact, we see him go sing for these songs that are good enough to put in a Coen movie, but are bad in the story.
Mm-hmm.
I watch this and I go, yeah, I'd stream that song, whatever. Yeah. But I think, you know, we're meant to go, well, this simplistic nonsense.
Sure. Well, and that's funny too, because in retrospect, there's no way they could have known it then, but in retrospect, to have Apocalypse, Justin Timberlake, and Kylo Ren all singing about not wanting to go to space is a funny thing. It seems like one of those things that in another 10 years, someone's going to dig it up and be like, remember when these three were all in the same room singing a stupid space song?
Yeah. And beamed that off to Mars where they're now living.
And it feels super celebratory in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like this great, powerful moment in a vacuum. But one out of those three people singing, you can see it in that performance alone that he hates every minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's almost mocking him for part. I mean, he is mocking him at the very beginning when he asks who the hell wrote the song.
Yeah. Right.
But I mean, he mocks him every beat of playing through the tune. And then the final nail in the coffin, maybe both, is that he believes so little in the song that he doesn't even for a moment consider wanting royalties.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That'll end up being, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou levels of popular.
Right.
Yeah, I love, that's definitely a Cohen thing, is creating something, not knowing that they might be talking about the same fucking thing, man. You work really hard on this one thing, nobody cares about it. And in doing that, you know, you did something stupid along the way that you didn't even give half a thought about, and that became a chart hit of sorts. Yeah. Yeah, well, he comes from what was a successful duo. And there's certainly an identity component about finding yourself after the death of a longstanding partner. And it's a really specific theme to talk about, but I would not be surprised at all if it was written around someone having that experience,
mm-hmm.
that you spend so long working on something. I mean, there's an inevitable comparison to you and I, but really anybody you work with on an established thing for a long time. And when someone isn't there to do their part, you're just suddenly like, where do I exist in the world? What is my...
Yeah.
I found solace in the fact that you and I both do a ton of stuff outside of Double Feature. But, you know, if I was in a band that was two people and the other person disappeared.
Moved to Chicago? Oh, disappeared? Sure.
Yeah. Right. Sorry about that, man. Sorry about that. If I was in a band with seven other people
right.
and they all moved back to Chicago. Yeah. I think that, you know, you have this identity thing that's tricky, and I'm really just going to stick up for this character this whole fucking time. But
oh, yeah.
I feel like he goes out and he does give that a shot. He's not such an artistic purist that he goes, I will not do this fucking pop stupid thing. He tries it and he goes, nope, really am miserable doing this. Thought I'd give it a shot. Mm-hmm. Not for me. See you later. That's further than I would have gone. I would go, no. Listen, I don't have to try everything once. That's stupid. I'm not going to like doing that. And so, you know, in calendar year 2016, I didn't file a tax return because I literally did not make one cent. so that's me. I'm not even really sure how I'm alive right now. But, you know, it gives me a really dumb perspective to watch this movie from and just go, no, of course you don't want to make dumb art. Why would anyone switch over to doing dumb stuff to make money? I don't understand that compromise at all. And so then I'm forced to look at, is this just a movie about the most unlucky man ever? Everybody else can watch it with their normal view of things and go, this guy's stellar. Fine. That's your, go get that critique anywhere else you want. But I watch it and go, what do you, you know, should he have made a different decision? What the fuck did this guy do wrong?
Sure. It's funny because to compare this to something like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, you have kind of that road journey, complete with a run-in with John Goodman.
God, this is the meanest John Goodman.
It's more than
like Satan got John Goodman.
Yeah. No,
it's
this
funny.
Is,
it's the everybody's a critic scene, but he's a critic of someone's suicide.
Right.
Why would you do it that way? That's dumb. Everybody knows you do it this way. They could be having a conversation about, say, his music.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing too, I think that the thing that most people probably don't see, or that not everybody sees in that scene, is John Goodman's character is financially successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it takes to make it.
Yeah.
You know, he's a heroin addict and he's miserable and he's a total fuck. I mean, you know, Lewin's half a fuck at best.
Yeah.
But this guy's worst, a total fuck. No, at best.
At best, okay.
But this guy just, when you see the people who are succeeding in this movie, they're not the people you're jealous of.
Right.
You know, that's one
it's
of the things.
It's often the feeling of, how can that guy fucking get here?
Exactly.
My songs don't go anywhere.
Exactly.
And I think that's what he's looking at.
I mean, when he finally gets the chance to play his song in Chicago, and that moment for me is just, it is one of the most shocking cinematic moments I can ever think of. Is that performance is so heartfelt and so strong, and he's come so far to do this. And the line following is, I just don't see a lot of money here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just jaw to the floor, like, beyond some of the most fucked up things we've ever seen in a movie, I'm just sitting there going, what do you mean you don't see, take a risk? I mean, to go back, remember Henry Fool?
Yes.
The, you know, the, well, I don't
exactly
really,
what
I don't see
about
a lot of money here.
Right.
And that it's, you know, you kind of go just, but you do acknowledge that it's outrageously good though. Is that not good right. enough?
In Diane Ward's words of a ninja, just drop it on YouTube.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, that's, it's a viral success, I think, has reignited a little bit of the false hope that you can just be extremely good and get your stuff out mm-hmm. there. But I think the rest of the internet has confirmed that, you know, any kind of skill is, God, I almost want to say it is of zero correlation mm-hmm. between right. skill and success. Right. I mean, well, it's not that. In some cases, it is. It's sure. just person with no talent or barely even
well,
doing
yeah.
a thing.
I mean, it's the fact that this takes place when it does in music is way, way, way more believable that he might make it because the most success, we're at a current climate in most art, but certainly of all things music, where the brand is more important than the product.
Sure.
And so, I mean, if, say, Nicki Minaj never put out another album for the rest of her career, that doesn't mean she'd stop being successful.
Right.
It's not about the product, it's about the brand. And so to go back to a time when virtuosity was actually acclaimed, you know, when you had to be good in order to even try, right? Yeah. This is before three chord punk. This is before Nirvana, where people kept simplifying and simplifying and go, if you can hit the guitar hard enough, if you can, you know, pony up $90 to buy it out of a pawn store, maybe sure. you could be the next big thing.
Before you could literally look under a rock and find a presidential candidate.
Exactly.
It almost seems like nothing matters at all anywhere on planet Earth anymore. That it's all random and chaotic and none of it makes any fucking sense.
Right. And no two cats are alike, despite the fact.
Does he know that that's not the cat?
I honestly don't think he gives a shit. I mean, I think that that's the other thing about Lewin is he's, and this is what I mean by half a fuck at best, is we see this time and time again throughout this film. Mm-hmm. Number one is always Lewin Davis. He forgets his baby's abortion date. You know, that's not that important to him, but he does have an abortion credit, which is tight. I love the hell out of the fact that he goes to the abortion doctor and he goes, oh, actually
you have a store credit.
Yeah. You have a free abortion, you know,
right.
He got the stamp card filled. He gets yeah. one free abortion for every 10.
Because of his past there, not because he got a Bed Bath & Beyond like coupon in the mail.
Right. No.
I don't know if that would sell in the area they live, but so let's look at a terrifying counterpoint to that then, which is where the film ends, and that is on Bob Dylan, Happenstance, playing the same place.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So let's look at it this way, and maybe this will give us answers or just terrify us, but Bob Dylan goes on to become the most well-known prolific folk singer probably of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
mm-hmm. yeah. Nobel Prize winning.
Big.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
big.
Yeah.
And didn't even have to kill anyone with drones to get it. So great for him. It's as if that's a sticking point for me that I'm still mad about. It's as if that. All right. So Bob Dylan's playing in literally the same place he is.
Right.
The very club that he said, I've already played there 400 times. Fuck that place. I don't care. I don't want to go back there. I'm above that. I can't keep, you know, playing the... I was going to think of a bad club in Chicago, but I like them all. But, you
Elbow
know...
Elbow Room.
Whatever the... Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah. I've seen great acts at the Elbow Room.
Sure, yeah.
But I've seen Bob Dylan at the Elbow breaks room. Your neck.
Right.
It's so high yeah. up. I don't understand what that... It's like it's a swimming pool in there. My sincerest apologies to people who have to go to the Elbow Room to see bands they like. Didn't Nine Inch Nails play there like right before I left?
No, they played somewhere else, but yes.
But Nine Inch Nails, you sure. can confirm is a band and has been yeah. in Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad that wasn't a false reality I was living in. So what this says to me is the very place that he said, fuck that place, I'm done, and then went back to, Bob Dylan plays it. And Bob mm-hmm. Dylan goes on to be Bob fucking Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
As if to say, Bob Dylan lives in the same world he does, at the same right. time he does, and even plays the same terrible clubs he does.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that Llewyn Davis is no one for the course of the film, and Bob Dylan is Bob Dylan?
I mean, right? I think the that goes back to what you were saying, is the terrible reality of it's way more luck than anything else.
Sure.
I mean, granted, I would say, and this is, you know, this is more into the specifics of the music, and I'm not sure the movie's commenting on this, but Bob Dylan was a very original performer and songwriter. Llewyn Davis.
Not that he doesn't deserve it, right?
No, but I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, man, I just
it's more
think,
a question of all the folk singers that make it, we push Bob Dylan to the top because he is the best.
Right.
But it is not to say that Llewyn Davis doesn't deserve to be in
number
that
two,
same
number three.
In that same right. group, or at least yeah. choosing from, you know, right, of known right. folk singers. Right. If you go on Wikipedia, list of known folk singers, Llewyn mm-hmm. Davis, not on that list in this world. Right. And that luck that sort of puts him in that place, I mean, that forces me to go, well, listen, he's getting dealt a lot of the same cards that you said were the best.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the movie definitely doesn't show him. I mean, it never shows Bob Dylan do anything, so we can't necessarily speculate on what Bob Dylan does or doesn't do, though I'm willing to guess he doesn't fuck the club owner. Ballpark
yes,
guess on
not.
That.
Probably not.
But I just, I mean, I think that part of the thing about the story of Llewyn is that things just keep not working out. And he never gets his feet on the ground. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe the difference is Bob Dylan showed up at that show ready to play the show, and he wasn't worried about spending his entire paycheck on union fees that he couldn't get a return for.
But that's another one of those things where I think people look at that and go, you fucked up the union fee thing. But I go in there, maybe I'm just finding out I'm a fuck up. Maybe that's what I'm doing today. But I would go in there and be like, fucking union fees. What are you talking about? Oh, you're not going to let me in? Give me a refund. Give me a refund right. on my union fees.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at that objectively, I go, you asshole, you can't get a refund for your union
right,
fees.
Right. It's like being behind on your utility bill.
Right. But then, in the moment I go, unions are a fucking sham anyways.
Right.
And you led me to believe that this would further my life and now it isn't. Fuck you, dude. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I definitely get that.
Sure.
He also has relationships, even though he's bad at them. It's not as if they aren't there at all. He's able to travel the country and only go through, you know, minor ugly things in
like
order
Indiana.
To do so.
Yeah.
Minor ugly things like Indiana. You know, it's a wonder this podcast is not taking off in places like Indiana. If you could have less of an adversarial relationship with entire states, old people still haven't started listening to the show from way back when you insulted all of them.
That's true. That's true.
So I almost feel like maybe if there's an answer, it's that he's just not up to the challenge of life.
Maybe.
You know, life is, for a large part, then about seizing the opportunities that are in front of you. And maybe it says more about that than settling.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's a movie about settling, which again, it's a Coen movie from some artists who have made it. I don't think it's about settling. But if it was a movie about settling, then the fact that he doesn't settle so he can put some bread on the table and get married at an acceptable age and become a cherished member of a community,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, he's doing it all wrong. He should take jobs when he can get them, even if he doesn't like them. But instead, I think what it might be saying is that through these, Bob Dylan is not afraid to play this club,
mm-hmm.
right? Bob Dylan probably didn't go 401 times? No, I won't play it the 401th time. But Bob Dylan found the opportunities to continue to move up in his career, and he found them through life experiences that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there is a mistake in Llewyn Davis, and really it's a film that begs you to figure out precisely what that is, it could be that had he stayed in a professional recording community full of people with bad music, he would have at least the foundation, the infrastructure
mm-hmm.
for something good to come along and shock and amaze them. he never gets to a point where he plays a song and they go, that kind of sucks. What about a dumber song? You know, he gets to a point where he tries to sell his music to somebody who doesn't know him and whatever. But if he had participated in these pop songs for so long, he could be an NSYNC and then have a successful, I don't know, rap career.
Right.
Or
Justin Timberlake. I'm sorry.
2 seconds into that, 2 seconds into that analogy that I did not know which boy band it was.
You nailed the boy band, but he doesn't rap.
Well, it was a, no, it's clearly not rap. Did I say rap?
You said rap.
If I was thinking more R&B.
Yeah.
And then
there
I was
you go.
Like, yeah, but it's a little more
hip hoppy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Hip hop. I would have probably been clear. Rap. Definitely not. Justin Timberlake does not rap. That is not a, but it is NSYNC, right?
Yeah, was NSYNC.
Okay.
Yeah.
I nailed it. Let's go back. I nailed it.
You absolutely nailed it.
One of the saddest parts of this movie for me, and it makes me
How many times we've said one of the saddest parts on today's show. This is,
I know. It's important to think about these things.
Yeah.
By looking at other people's failed pasts, mm-hmm. we can have successful futures.
Right, sure.
We can, let me rephrase that. By looking at other people's failed pasts, we can be sad.
Uh-huh.
Successfully. So I mentioned, I thought at the last movie, there's a little bit of cyclical nature to that, that, hey, listen, this doesn't just solve everything and you move on. That was a big thing I want to do with this position too. It's not just like, hey, you won and now everything's cool. You deal with trying to find your way through life. Again, not through depression, I think, just through his failures. And he finds himself in a sort of loop. Where, you know, the beginning of the movie is the end of the movie. It's its way of saying, this is just going to keep going until you do something to break out of it. Mm-hmm. And within the loops, you're going to see other people do it where you couldn't. And as the loops progress, it's not that the character doesn't, because we see him edge closer to suicide. The moment where he is talking to the guy about he used to have a partner, and the guy doesn't know what happened to his partner, but said, you should get back with him.
Right.
I think there's a little ring in there about, oh yeah, that would be a good idea. Like, hey, I should jump off a bridge too, mm-hmm. to get back with him. And he finds himself, you know, his own trajectory is moving down while he is in that infinite loop. And it's a moment to pause and go, you know, the repetition of this is not going to make it easier. You can still have a arc that slides downward despite the fact you're going through the motions. The repetition of playing the club for the 401th time, maybe that's better. I don't know. We have a website, it's doublefeature.fm. Email address is hidden.
But I have the feeling you all know that by now.
Possible it's their first show. And if that's the case, what are we doing next time? Producers.
I just realized that.
No, the producers. All right, what is this? 465. I want to thank for helping us all year, David B. Anderson, Greg Winter, Aaron Shore, Kimberly Anse, Debbie Starin, Meta Somerville, David Koch, and Lexi Love for producing our show.
Mm-hmm. I would like to thank John for also helping to create our show by giving
Beaver John, by giving us
multiple films with which to pad our own lack of knowing what films to ever talk about.
Give me two of them.
Well, it's time. It's time to bring that horrible thing to a close, which is this year's Journey. So this is the point in our War and Peace pairing where it's all bad, all bad, no good, and you and all your friends are fucked. So for the war portion, we will be covering The Deer Hunter in its 3 hours of, yes, Vietnam glory. And then we're going to pair that with Danny Boyle's Trainspotting, which is it's the last Danny Boyle film for me. Never seen it, so.
Oh, great. That's good.
Ready to get my drug on.
Two great movies to go together, and we'll facilitate the greatest conversation we've had in this whole run. We've definitely boiled to a point, and we're there now. And also, Trainspotting is really good.
All right, let's watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.
So he has a whole data sheet called Tits or Get the Fuck Out, which goes through every episode of every Killapalooza and every movie within and sees if there's nudity or not.
Wow.
Just data like this. It's incredible. Yeah. Nothing like this has ever existed.
Right.
By nothing like this, I mean nothing this arbitrary.
It's the true champion of our podcast is this document.
PATRION.com/double-feature.